I'll call the Historic Preservation Committee meeting for Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014. Order. It's almost 5 minutes after six. The first order of business is a roll call. Fredericks?
Here.
Copperroot?
Here.
Pasco is potentially here, but going to be late. Metzler?
Here.
Rop? Here. Item number two on the agenda is to modify or and adopt the agenda. Are there any changes to tonight's agenda? Hearing none, do we need a motion? I forget. We should.
Yeah. I'll make a motion to adopt the agenda.
I second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carried. Item number three, approved minutes from September 24th, 2014. Fred, were you here for that meeting?
I think I was.
I think you were.
Yeah. Thank you.
I want to give you credit. Any other comments or questions about the agenda or about the minutes? If not, then I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes with that one correction.
We have a motion. We have a second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item number four, announcements. Anybody have any announcements?
Yeah, I can give you an idea. On the Public Works Committee met last Thursday. And the discussion on the Webster Avenue bridge that's going to be put in by Schrader's, and the recommendation was to go more of the make it a little more historic or dress it up a little bit. So they were talking about the red brick and then a different archway on the bridge itself. So,
and that's gonna happen. I mean, that's
the cost factor was pretty much the same.
Budget.
Yeah, it was. Just pretty much the same, so.
So, well, that's fine. It's good.
Since you're on that item, you might want to take a look at the bridge going across the Fox River that is made of stone instead of brick. So you may want to take a look at matching something along those lines, because that's designated as our historic bridge also. You know what I'm talking about? Down by, across the Fox River, down next to Schneider's place on the lane, the railroad bridge.
Oh, the railroad, okay.
Yeah. So that's a stone bridge. So the choice between brick or stone base, because it's just a form.
Thanks.
Any other announcements? Okay, we'll go on to item number five, public appearances.
Unless you can open up Jennifer. Jennifer's here, well, on the raising.
Yeah. Maybe since that's an item on our agenda, that maybe you could be included in the discussion at that point rather than in the public appearances. Is that okay?
Whatever you prefer.
Yeah. That way we can have it all contained in the same,
sure,
same item.
And then I'm Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I don't think that our raising ordinance is going to be enforceable because we don't have a complete set of field notes. I know that you've heard this before, but we should have field notes on all pre-1960 potentially eligible properties in the village, and we don't have those field notes at all, and the state doesn't have them either. They belong to the village. They should be here on site for residents to evaluate. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other public appearances? We'll move on to old business. Item number 6, approval of raising ordinance. Trevor, do you want to start us off on this? Or?
Sure. I know we've kind of visited this item a few times. The committee agreed to what was option one, kind of informally last time. But then I spoke to Joe DeRose from the Wisconsin Historical Society, and he just mentioned kind of looking at what I included as option two, which is Fond du Lac's raising ordinance. And really the biggest difference between option one and option two is the tiering of the timeline. And that's kind of what Joe DeRose really liked about that ordinance is, I believe Fond du Lac had 6 months for residential, for raising residential buildings as a delay, and they had up to a year for commercial buildings. I think in here I put it back down to 60 days for residential, just because that's what we had discussed previously. And then I raised it to 90 days, but that was just kind of just to kind of use as an example. Then I did include a third option, and I kind of like that one the best, to be honest, just because it kind of takes everything. It directs you in the building code to our historic preservation ordinance, and then in our chapter 424, it kind of spells out the same as what is mentioned in option two. So there's a few variations, and then I figured since we're looking at that ordinance anyway, I just did a little editing in it as well. Really changing in that ordinance from demolition to raising, just so the words match up and are consistent. And then I did move a section down to the procedures because I felt like that was more of a procedure. But other than that, there's that. So I guess it's up to you guys. Whatever you prefer. And maybe you'd like a combination of all three. But I will mention that we did have laid out in Chapter 424 a 30-day delay period already for ordinances. And that's something that's required on all national and state-recognized structures. That's a state and federal mandate. And as a CLG, that's something we have to kind of follow and should follow. So,
at one point, we had some discussions about why 60 days, and I think it had one of the reasons was we occasionally have not had a quorum, and so that was to give us enough time to have another shot at being able to, you know, review it at, you know, as a quorum. And I'll just throw this out. I mean, I think there'd be a way to. I think 60 might be a little long, and I know our guests would probably want to talk to us about that. But I was thinking, what if we made it 45? You know, the worst case scenario is that they come in with a request the day after our meeting, so they have to wait, say, 30 days. And so at the end of the 30 days, we meet and we don't have a quorum. Wouldn't it be possible for our committee to kind of make an effort to reschedule that meeting sometime within the next 2 weeks? Again, that's the worst case scenario. you know, to try and put a little of the pressure on ourselves to make it happen, you know. And so I'll just throw that out there as a way to get it from 60 down to, you know, no more than 45. So, I mean, I think we might owe, you know, the persons, the people who are coming forth with this request, you know, a little effort on our part to try and make it happen within a reasonable time frame. So it's one of my thoughts on that. So.
And our intent isn't to make it drag out. I mean, you said Fond du Lac's is 6 months, so I don't know. I guess we'd have to schedule a special meeting. I don't know if that's difficult usually to do that, but otherwise, I would be okay with the 60 days because we would try to do it as soon as possible. But then we have a little flexibility in case we can't get a special meeting.
Yeah,
be a maximum of 60, like no more.
And that's
60.
The way it was worded anyway.
Right.
Up to 60. Would now be a good time for you to offer some of your thoughts?
Maybe you want to just make a motion to suspend the rules.
I think we'd need a motion to suspend our discussion.
Suspend the rules.
To suspend the rules.
I'll make a motion to suspend the rules and open it up for the public.
I second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries.
Before you go on to Deb, I have a question on the quorum issue. Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I believe that the president of the village is automatically a member of this committee, and that I was questioning whether he has voting rights and whether he could be counted as part of the quorum. I think under village rules, the president's a part of there, has the right to be a part of every committee. So if we can look into that, that might solve your quorum problem if you're short.
If I may speak?
Go ahead.
I have looked at that. For other committees, it is specifically laid out. If a trustee is a member in the historic preservation, it doesn't specifically say so.
But I think that further, the president is automatically—he's the only one that's automatically a member of every committee.
That isn't part of the ordinance.
I know it's under the village rules.
Could be under the charter ordinance.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure that the president has a right to sit on any committee he chooses. And then that would, and then my question was, is it, would his vote, does he have the right to vote, and would that his presence count as a quorum? So that I don't know.
Okay. Look into that.
Okay. Deb, I'm sorry, I forgot.
That's all. It's Jennifer Sundstrom.
Jennifer.
I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Realtors Association of Northeast Wisconsin. Just for point of reference, our board represents most of Northeast Wisconsin. We stretch all the way up from Shawano and Wapaka down to Fond du Lac. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with all of you tonight on this ordinance. I can say that over the years and watching different issues play out in communities, I've seen the spectrum of things kind of showing up in the newspaper where community members and members of historic preservation committees are very upset. All of a sudden, they're driving down the street one day and a home is just gone. You know, overnight, there was no notice to them. They had no idea that a proposed demolition was even on the docket, and, you know, kind of having some questions, concerns of, you know, how does a home that is on the historic register just disappear overnight, and we didn't know anything about it, all the way to a point where you can have a project with a site that is either historic or is even just older. It's not necessarily has any special designation, and a plan has been in place to take the building down and put in a new type of development for years. And all of a sudden, in the, you know, the 11th hour, suddenly the project's held up by a raise ordinance, and, you know, in what the purposes and the mission of individuals from varies from one community and committee to the next. But when we were looking at different ordinances, I would have to say that it was just recently, most recently, it was the city of Green Bay that our members revisited the issue and talked a little bit about it. And I spoke with a different number of members around Northeast Wisconsin, and universally what they said is it's more a matter of understanding process, Jennifer. They said, you know, if you have a building and it's going to be demolished because it's condemned, in other words, it has to be taken down by order, that process is a bit faster, obviously, because probably the owner has been stalling for a long time, and it takes an order to take it down. But even then, it's not a fast thing. It's not like that just happened overnight. There was a number of people, you know, at the local government level who were involved in that process, etc. They said, but you really expand that when you're talking about a raise order for any type of structure or building, commercial or residential, that's not being condemned. It still technically could be viable. It probably, in most instances, needs a lot of work or investment, but it could still be viable. Most of the time, a person is not coming before a government entity for a raise ordinance. That's, again, something that they do many times years before the process is originally started. You have the owner of a property or investor, and they're saying, okay, this is what we have in mind for the site. They're not going to take something down until they already have an understanding of what their intention is for that property. And if you're going to take something down and then you're planning on rebuilding, you have a site development review process. And from working with the local units of government, from you know, the first plat or the first design submission and things of that nature, all the way through, it can be, I don't even know if I've seen anything that's gone as quickly as a year. I mean, there's usually a lot involved for that process. And so they said the frustration from an ordinance, from the perspective of a property owner or a developer or investor in these types of ordinances, is that the powers that be at the local unit of government knew the intent was to take that structure down a long time before that person ever comes in and even applies for the raise ordinance. So it's a matter of communication from within the local unit of government from the beginning to the Historic Plan Commission, saying, listen, someone's coming in, they own this property, they're coming to us, this is their proposal for the property. Ultimately, at the end of the day, when it's approved, it will result in the demolition of the structure. So there's just a matter of timing there. You don't need to wait, in a nutshell, until the raise permit is granted for a body such as this to find out about a future proposal to take a structure down. The other element of it is, again, the intention. In some communities, and I don't mean any disrespect here, I'm just, you know, first time meeting with all of you, but we do have some instances where the intention of waiting, of you know, they found out a building is proposed to be taken down, is not to find an alternative buyer. The intention is not to try and pull together various grants and funds because they want to present it to the owner saying, listen, you don't have to demolish this building. You could still make this an office building. You could still make this a daycare or a store by simply, you know, taking all of these grants and tax credits and restoring the building. Would you be amenable to that if we could help you pull the resources together to make that affordable? Usually that's not the intention either. Because all you really need to do most of the time for an investor is to say two questions. Would you have any interest in restoring this building if we could help you fund it? They're going to pretty much know right there at that point in time, yes, I would have some interest if you could make that affordable to me. And also, would you be interested in selling it what would be your bottom line offer you would need to sell this site in this building to someone else. They would know right then and there as well whether they have any interest in doing that. It doesn't take 60 days. It doesn't take 10 days. They probably could tell you within the day, if not that week. So again, two parts. If the intent is truly to just try to make sure that all other avenues have been exhausted of what you could possibly do with that structure and site, that can happen from the very beginning, and recognizing and valuing the fact that that property owner does have the right to say yes or no to either of those options. But if the intent is different than that, then it would make sense that you're waiting until the raise permit. Then it would make sense to have a great big long delay, because that is when you can have adequate time to drum up all kinds of media opposition, pull out every person in the community who doesn't want to see a single building that is, you know, older than 50 years taken down. You create huge delays for the developer. You cause them lots of costs. They end up sometimes getting very frustrated and saying, forget it, and just, you know, walking away. If that's the intent, then these ordinances work very well. If that's not the intent, then I would suggest simply working out a procedural process within the village that says, listen, when someone's coming forward with a proposal to demolish a residential or commercial structure that is in one of our historic districts, please make sure that you notify the Historic Preservation Commission right away and foster a meeting with them so we can ask them those two questions right up front. Do you have any interest in selling? What's your bottom line? Would you be interested in salvaging the building if we could help you pull together grants and resources? And then, you know, if the answer is yes, then you still have, you know, quite a bit of time to try and pull that together before they would move forward. I don't know. I know that what I said makes sense to me. I don't know if what I just said makes sense to all of you, but that's the gist of what our members from a variety of different communities that do development projects that have worked with older historic areas have said. Their intent is never to just slip something under the rug when no one's watching and take the building down. They've come in a long time into the offices before that ever happened, and we're very upfront of this is what we're proposing. They're not going to pay all the money to demolish a building if they don't know ahead of time from the local unit of government that their proposal of what they're going to build on there is going to go through. Because then they're just out a whole bunch of money.
I guess I'd like to respond to some of the things. If we're a small community, mm-hmm. and Trevor would, in addition to helping our committee, he also is the zoning administrator, zoning and planning, so he would be also taking a new project mm-hmm. through the process. Mm-hmm. So there aren't different departments that are disconnected. Trevor's going to know, you know, and if something takes a year to go through the process, he's also going to know that it might be a historically designated property.
One of the benefits of a small community.
So we wouldn't have that disconnect. We would know all along, and we would be able to work through the process at the same time. Right now, this raising ordinance is written to apply to houses that are on the national registry or locally designated. And at this time, the only properties that we have are within Heritage Hill, mm-hmm. the reformatory property, and a house on Taft Street. Those are the only buildings, and that would be it, with the guardhouses are locally designated within Heritage Hill. Those are the only buildings that this mm-hmm. ordinance would even apply to. We're looking at having the Village Community Center and the Water Building on Green Avenue added to the National Registry, but those are village-owned. So those mm-hmm. we would know.
Yeah.
We're also looking at opening it up to the possibility of having historic districts or some individually eligible homes. We're holding a meeting in December to let them know what the whole benefit is of being on the register, mm-hmm. so everybody will be completely aware. But the way that the ordinance is written, it really isn't applying to a whole lot right now.
Right. Whether it's, though, applying to three people who own property or whether it's applying to 800. For the three people who own that property, if you're passing an ordinance that can potentially affect the rights attached to that property, it's important to them. So again, I'm kind of going back to, if there are properties, and it's a little easier for you to get a hold of because you kind of know exactly what you're talking about. If there's a place that you're afraid is going to be raised, you know, the community's already going to know about it. And the person, they're not going to raise it unless they have a site plan. They have an intention of what they're going to do with it. You're going to get, if there's a good trust in the communication here, like you said, Trevor's going to notify you. There's no need for an ordinance that's triggered at the raise permit time to hold them up for another 60 days.
Well, I kind of disagree with you on that because, take for instance, the Bishop's House. They just tore it down with no intent of building anything on there. Sell it as a vacant lot.
All right.
Still vacant 4 years later.
So a plan never came in.
Right.
But there could have been a potential to have that building moved if somebody was interested in it.
And I think this is where this all started because of that.
Okay. And you don't think they should have been able to tear their home down?
Somebody may have moved it. And a lot of these are houses in residential areas where there won't be a big area plan coming in. These are residential districts. We have a very limited number of lots. A lot of times people tear down a house to build a house here. So if there's a small house being torn down and it's on the registry, somebody could move that. I mean, and I know, like, there was a house on the corner of Wabanor and Broadview, a very old house that she had tried to get that relocated to see if she could sell that before she built her new house there, the Elfners, and couldn't. Nobody wanted it. So people will move houses.
Though. Okay. Well, can I ask this question, I guess? If they applied for their raise permit and you brought them in and you asked them, would you be open to moving this house if we found someone who's interested or paying you to renovate it so you could sell it without raising it? And, you know, would you be interested in doing that? And they said no. Why would you need another 60 days?
Well, I think that we would have to have it on an agenda and formally ask them that. I don't know that somebody at the village could just ask them. We would have to meet in order to present that to them. And that's
been our
problem. Well,
I think someone, you would put that on your permit, your raise permit. Would you be interested in soliciting help from the Plan Commission to find a buyer for this property or alternative investment, you know, alternative grants or funding to restore it? If their answer is yes, then you say, okay, well, then the Plan Commission would love to work with you. They just need a little bit of time. They're asking for 60 days to try and do some research and find some help for you to see if they can make that happen. And if they really think, yeah, it would be nice to have someone buy this house and move it, or yes, you know, I hate to tear this house down. We just can't afford to restore it as it is. If they can help us do that, they'd probably give you a whole lot of time to help. But if they said no, we want to tear this house down. That's our intent. We're not looking for grants. We're not looking for someone to buy it. Then there really is no need to hold them up for another 60 days.
That 60 days does allow us some time to document the house, take pictures if they would let us in to take photos and gather information, just so we would have it for records. So,
I kind of agree. I think it shouldn't be decided based on someone checking a box. I think there needs to be, you know, some contact, personal contact. And the way we do that is in the form of meetings. And I don't think it's too much to ask them to attend the next meeting. I mean, we have them once a month. And it's published when they are. And I don't think that's too much to ask.
And so would you allow them to move forward regardless of whether you have quorum or not?
Well, if we have 60 days, that gives us two chances to have a meeting. And then at that point, I think then the building inspector can issue the permit.
Well, what if it was one day, 30 days? I mean, should that homeowner be held up because members of the Plan Commission are not present for a scheduled meeting? I mean, if I sat on a Plan Commission and these things were very, very important to me, and I knew on the agenda was a discussion with a potential homeowner about them raising the house, and I want I want some authority over that and say in that, I'd make sure I was there.
And that's our intent, too, is to have us all present. And we are currently, you know, we our charter calls for 7 members, and we have 5. And one's not able to come tonight. So, and we're as actively as we can, you know, seeking 2 new members, you know, in the ways that we go about doing that. And so again, the current circumstances, we only have one single-family home that would be affected by this, and I believe that we have enough time to fully staff our committee so that we can do our job. That's what our mandate is, and anything less than that is not doing our job. So, I mean, I believe that we need to have this ordinance.
What if you had provisions, like you said, you gave the example that in some instances they raised the house with no future intent of building something, so there isn't a process before it. But what about all of those instances where generally there is a process before it? Shouldn't that be the time where your 60 days is triggered and not at the raise permit time?
I think we would encourage them to apply earlier than waiting until after the whole plan approval process. I think we would encourage them to do that at the same time.
If they did meet with you, though, would you still trigger a 60-day delay when they go to do the raise permit?
At that point, I think if we work with them all along, I don't think that we would wait another 60 days and add time to that project.
I think that's one way that you could amend the ordinance to, of simply saying, you know, your 60-day delay is going to be triggered either at the raise permit or whenever the owner presents to the community the desire to raise the building and put something alternative on there. So at least then it's spelled out very clearly in the ordinance that if they come forward early and meet with you, they're not going to be penalized further down the road because you can't come to an agreement. And again, you know, I said, you know, kind of what our members' thoughts are on the process. The only other thing I would say is I'm sure that you are all aware, in the last state budget, there was additional money put in there to significantly increase the historic tax credits, and our association was very supportive of that for the ability to keep these buildings viable but also for economic development purposes. But in my job, I can tell you that probably one of the more difficult issues regarding historic preservation is the resistance of property owners to be put into historic districts or have a designation. And I would say that in part, a large part of their resistance or fear of doing that is because of future restrictions that are placed on their property, such as this one. And so the more ordinances like this that are enacted, it may help you have more time to meet with one property owner. But as a result, the unintended consequence, not just for this village, but it kind of spreads, is for more and more property owners to see a lot more negatives associated with being part of a historic district or being a designated home than there are positives. And so you end up potentially long-term losing more homes participating voluntarily than what you really gain in the end of keeping simply delaying one home that's ultimately going to do exactly what they intended to do. So I just, you know, you have to do the pros and the cons and weigh what you're getting out of this ordinance versus what it may be costing you long term as far as people participating in historic preservation efforts.
You know, you described, and I think we agreed that, you know, the process to raise a property is kind of the end of a series of meetings that might take a year or more, you know, because as you said, the owner is not going to tear it down until he has a plan to put something up, chances are. I mean, there's an exception.
There's an exception, usually,
right,
to every
yeah,
rule.
Yeah, there's an exception. That's one reason why we might want to have an ordinance. But in an ideal situation that I see is that, yeah, those discussions take place during that year when permits are being discussed for the new building and you know, so that at any point they could be, you know, again, as Barb said, it's a small community and it's a small staff here and everybody can communicate with each other so that we would certainly know that somebody is working on a plan, and at the end of that plan, when it's approved, then he's going to want to raise the building. Yeah. So we could certainly just do that at any point along the process. You know, even if he changes his mind and decides not to do it, we could still go through that process so he's not delayed at the end.
You know, another example is on the corner of Libel and Terraview. The owner of that home just bought a house next door, not to redevelop it. He just bought it, tore it down to expand his yard. Now, if that would have been a historical house, you know, at least we would have had the chance to do something, move it, or
document it at least.
You know, I see nothing wrong with the 60 days. I mean, it's, as being a builder and a developer myself, I mean, I'm doing a new home in Door County. It took me 3 months and 5 permits just to get a, just to build a new house. So I see 60 days in here is really not a big deal.
Didn't you say the state said 30 at a minimum?
Right.
And they're, and they would like the Fond du Lac ordinance, which is 6 months.
Right.
One thing I would caution you, just tongue-in-cheek, is I often see communities comparing their ordinances to other community, and they don't really look at the community they're trying to emulate. I don't necessarily know that the village of Alloway would want to be the city of Fond du Lac. They've got their own issues.
It's funny you mention that, because the very first plat in Alloway was developed by Judge Doty, and the very first plats in Wisconsin were over at Heritage Hill, and we had the very first subdivisions. Judge Doty also designed Fond du Lac and Madison, so we have a long history of city planning here, but we also have a long history of property rights. And I'm very concerned about somebody deciding that they would like to delay somebody tearing down a house, or whether it's 60 days or 6 months, so they can find somebody to buy the house for a dollar and move it off, or possibly buy the particular structure. And, for example, I'm talking about we have the Lombardi house. So if somebody wanted the Lombardi house and for some reason wanted to demolish it and build a beautiful house, let's say that they bought the entire block on Sunset Circle, which is, people have done that. They bought multiple lots over there. If somebody bought a lot and maybe a couple lots and wanted to tear down some small houses and build something beautiful with a beautiful view, we're going to say, no, you cannot do that, even though the house is obsolete. So we have a property rights issue, and we can't come to the table and say, I want to find a buyer for your property, and they may say, well, I don't want to sell it to somebody else. I just want to build the house of my dreams here, and I'm going to buy these 3 houses in Sunset Circle, and I'm going to tear them down. And so the village is, what we're talking about now is the village is deciding that we want to prevent that from happening. And so that's what the issue is you want to stop somebody from doing something with their property that right now they have the right to do it. Now, in that situation, they would have to go through zoning and get 3 parcels put together. But, for example, on Robinson Hill, you have some nice views of the water. Somebody may decide to buy 2 old houses, tear them down, and put up something nice with a nice view. So that's really what you're... what you're looking at is telling people that they can't do what they want to do, and that we're going to have this other organization, what was it, the Historic Trust? The Historic Trust was going to take responsibility for finding a new buyer and going that route. So somebody may not want to sell it. So I think that you're right. On day one, if they come in and they check the box and they say, I wouldn't sell it, and I'm not interested in renovating it, I want to put what I want to put there, that's the box to do. And then I have seen other ordinances that say that those people then need some counseling, right? That's what this group is designed to do, is to counsel those property owners. And the way that other municipalities say is, our counseling is, we're not going to make you come to the committee, but we do have a pamphlet that we do require you to at least take and look at. You don't have to read it, but you have to take a look at it, and this is why we have our historic preservation, and you're aware of why we exist, and if you still want to thumb your nose at us, you have that right. But they do the checkbox, and they give you a pamphlet, and you can still get your permit, your demolition permit, but it's not going to take 6 months. And then, for example, if you're going to delay somebody, who's going to pay the holding cost and the insurance and everything that you're going to do to delay somebody's, even the demolition of a Bishop Fox's house?
Who's going to pay the holding costs on that? You're transferring those costs onto an unwilling participant.
Well, the state is already telling us 30 days minimum, so we're just adding another month to that.
Well, the state that's to keep our CLG status.
I would think
correct.
So. Yes.
Yeah. So that's not a state. I don't think that's a state mandate.
Well, we don't want to lose that, though.
Right. But that's something else. But the 30 days is a reasonable thing. But you can use the check boxes, and I just think that it's a slippery slope when you start taking away people's rights, whether it's to demolish the house. We've had the issue already that the contractor that the state decided that they didn't like people's front doors and they didn't like people's new garage doors, and they pulled them off the National Register potential, which took away potential tax benefits to them, only because they didn't like the garage door. There were 100 properties that were removed from the potentially eligible list. That's why I asked for the field notes. I want to know what those 100 properties are. And I was told that they were taken off of the potential eligible list because they had new garage doors or new front doors, and that the state didn't like those, and that the contractor didn't like those. But that was arbitrary and capricious, and that's not the way that we do business.
It's not our intent to take the 60 days. It'll be on the next agenda. It's just in the event that we couldn't get a quorum, and we usually have been able to get a quorum, but it's just a safety, I guess, for us.
And we're not, and nowhere have I read that the owner, at the end of the day, doesn't have the right to tear his building down.
Exactly.
I mean, we're not exactly assuming that we have the power to stop someone from doing what they want to do.
Exactly.
But we want to do is put a few things out there for everybody to think about. And otherwise, why do we exist? And I don't think 60 days as a maximum is that unreasonable, considering that people know well in advance what they plan on doing, and the ball's in their court. And as long as they're aware up front, as soon as they come to the village and ask for anything, and if they're on the National Historic Register, if the owner of the home on Taft Street comes to the village, well, you can bet we'd be meeting way before they decide, before they have an approved plan for what structure to put on that site. If the house next to him wants to buy that lot, buy that property and raise it and plant a vegetable garden, we're going to know that long enough in advance, so the 60 days is not an issue.
So you would only apply the 60 days when a property owner has not previously applied for site plan review,
and we couldn't get a quorum for the next meeting. Otherwise, it will.
No, I'm talking about when you have a site plan review. It's months. It's in years.
It's probably 2 or 3 months, and we're so small that Howard and I are both on plan commission, so we would also be on the committee that's taking it through site plan review. So we will know.
So, but I mean, you need to state. You know, when I do talk with committees, local units of government, everybody looks at the ordinance through the eyes of their own intent versus what the actual language is. You may not be here next year, and this ordinance may still be on the books 20 years from now. You have to have the ordinance state very clearly what your true intent is. And if your true intent is that you don't plan on holding something up for 2 months, your plan is for 30 days, then put the 30 days in there and just make a concerted effort to make sure that you meet and address it. And it's, you know, you're saying 60 days, but it is 2 months. And the truth of the matter is, you know, there could be many scenarios where somebody knows they're on the historic register, they're familiar with the village's ordinance, they know they're going to have to go through this process before they get their raise permit. You may also have a lot of other scenarios as well. You may have somebody who, family members, there is the person ends up being deceased. You get it through an inheritance. You get it in October. The house needs tremendous amount of work. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars to be able to restore it so that it's functional. You don't have that kind of money. So you also can't afford to maintain that house and heat it through a whole nother winter. You're not going to be able to sell it as is. 2 months is a whole long time before somebody can move forward and do what they need to do with that property. So depending on the time of year and the situation, 2 months could be nothing, not a big deal, and they'll sit through it. 2 months could be a significant delay and cost delay to people to move forward with the project. So I'm just saying that, you know, there's there's different ways of looking at different situations. They're not always the same for every single property that may be coming forward for a race permit. But at the very least, I would definitely ask for you to at least put language in that if you're going to stick with a delay, however long it is, that it is triggered not just at the time they apply for the race permit, but it is first triggered if they come in and apply for any other type of preliminary approval, if they have intentions for the, so that their 60 days can start as soon as possible and not create any further delays down the road.
I think the perfect case study would be the house on Lazar and the Fox River. Our company sold that, and they went through a protracted process, and they got the demolition permit. But that was a surveyed property, a numbered property, one of the special properties that that we evaluated for historic significance. But it was in such bad shape that we didn't object, nobody objected at all to it coming down, because something nice is going to go in its place. So I think that to see how this ordinance would work on a surveyed property, because that is registered with the state, it's on the state database, you should take a look to see how we handled that project and then see if we would do something different if we had this ordinance in place. Because that was one of the properties that was surveyed. It does have a survey number, and it is on the state database.
But it wasn't. It would not be affected by that raise ordinance. Only the houses that are eligible to be in the historic district are individually eligible. And other than a couple of the village buildings and a mausoleum, they're all residential. They're all in residential districts. So if somebody was going to raise a couple of buildings and put up a commercial property, that is going to take time. That needs to be rezoned and go through the site plan review process. And the rezoning is public hearings before plan commission and the village board. So if somebody wants to tear a house down to build a commercial project and you're saying, could it be working concurrently with the site plan review, that couldn't be done in 2 months. I don't know that we would even rezone anything that is eligible to be a commercial property. That would be spot zoning. These are in residential neighborhoods.
Right, amateur rezoning. They may just want to take the property down and build something, another residential structure. But I don't foresee anybody coming in and applying for the building permit or applying for the raise permit before they've met with the village and know that they're going to be able to get their building permit for that site. So I'm just saying, you're right, it is more time. So just make sure that there's language in the ordinance so that if all of you are gone someday, you don't have a situation where someone comes in, they meet with the village, they show their proposal of what they're going to build, they receive their preliminary approvals and their building permit, and then they say, and now we're going to start your 60-day delay. So that the plan, they'd be like, why didn't you tell them that before? Just write it in there. Make it very clear in the language that's when the trigger is.
The thing is though, the state says hold from the day of the raise permit issued. So you have to have the 30-day after the raise permit.
Well, then if their intent is to raise, why don't you just start the application for that as well?
Why not have things run? Mm-hmm. It could be running concurrently with the plans and discussions about the site plan review and start the raise permit process at that point. So what's... If things can be done concurrently, so the 30 days are, this 30-day period has been satisfied. By the time the site plan review is done and everything is in order and the financing and everything, the 30 days have already been consumed during that prior 6 months or 2 years or whatever it takes. So I just don't think there will be a problem, given the fact that we're a small community. And we all talk to ourselves, no matter who's in my place or Bart's place, we want to establish something, and maybe there's a way to put in that language, what you said and what I said, maybe some combination.
Because trust me, just saying, trust us, we'll talk to each other.
No, I don't mean that.
Doesn't buy a lot of assurance to the property owners.
That's not what I meant. I meant that the raise permitting process can run concurrently with any development plans. And the sooner the better.
Yes.
You know, in words that Trevor's good at paraphrasing stuff that we say to have it make sense. You understand what I'm what I'm saying? We could add that at any point in whichever one of these three scenarios we we choose to present to the village board. And I think that is a good effort to try and alleviate the problem that you brought up, which is valid. 60 days, but I can see 60 days can be a long time if it's November and your house has fallen down. We don't want that to happen.
It can also be a short time, too.
Yeah. Okay. It doesn't have to be 60 days.
Yeah.
And finally, what my objection in using the Lazar property was that the village doesn't have standards for what makes a house historic. It doesn't have objective standards. And then I believe that because we don't have objective standards, that our ordinance will not be enforceable. The fact that we keep pointing out that we should have been using the federal guidelines for the National Register, it doesn't hold any water because we don't have that as part of our ordinance. So there are no objective standards for what makes a property historic. And the fact that we say that we used the National Register standards, when in fact we really didn't, and the only way to prove that we did would be to have those field notes. But those field notes don't exist. So, but we're supposed to have them, and that was part of the contract. So there, it's not object. There's no objective standards for what constitutes a historic house other than a contractor's opinion. And there are no, we need objective standards.
Well, how the ordinance reads is it would only apply to homes that are already listed on the national or state
which
register.
Which is a contractor's opinion.
No,
I've objected to this for two years.
Those are homes nationally recognized or state recognized.
No, they're contractor recognized and by a handful of people at the in Madison. So there's two people in Madison and one or two contractors that got together and decided, and they didn't document their research very well. And that's the problem, is that there's no standards for judging what makes one house historic and one house not, one neighborhood historic, one house not. The contractor said that there were 13 districts, and one guy from the state came through and said, no, you don't have 13, you have 3, and this is what you get. And these are the houses I want. And that's not the way we do business. We shouldn't have capricious standards, and that's my objection. We need objective standards. And then you need something that's enforceable.
I almost see that as a separate issue than this.
No, this goes to what makes a house historic. And there needs to be standards when you look at it. When we go down the street and we look at a house, somebody should know that qualifies and that doesn't. And when we took off 100 properties because the contractor didn't like the front door or the garage door, but he put other properties on that were just as bad, there's no way to know. So you have one person's opinion and just a handful of people's opinion when you're regulating 5,000 houses. So if you want to regulate somebody, you need to do it fairly.
If I could just say I really appreciate your time. I know that being on historic preservation commissions is 90% of the time a thankless job. I live in a very old house, and as much of headaches it gives me, I am glad that it's still standing and I was able to purchase it and move in. Dealing a lot with these historic issues through the years, I'll just leave you with this. Since we're heading into election season, I really see the issues surrounding historic preservation as what the parties deal with. You're going to have a segment of the population that's full throttle, passionate about historic preservation like you are. You're going to have a segment of the population who does not care one iota, and your main goal to really accomplish what you want to do is to try to get those swing voters. The people who are somewhere in the middle and how they feel about historic preservation. And like I said, the best way you can pull them towards your side rather than pushing them towards the other is trying to be as advisory as you can be, having carrots, staying away from the sticks, having people in your community say, you know, I applied to be on the Historic Preservation District or House. I have no regrets about it. The Village Plan Commission and Board, they're great to work with. They've never made me regret my decision. Things of that nature, that type of word spreads. You don't want it to go the other way. You don't want someone to have a really bad experience because that one experience can travel a long way in a small community. And so I just leave you with that. Try to you're going to attract more of the middle bees on historic preservation with honey. So if I never speak with you again, I wish you the best of luck. I appreciate you taking into consideration. And if you do work on some language, if you could send it my way just so I can share it with my members, I would appreciate that.
Definitely. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you need a motion to return?
I think we probably need a motion to
return to the regular order of business.
To the regular order of business.
I will make that motion.
We have a second?
Yes.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. We're back in session and we're discussing agenda item 6, approval of grazing ordinance. And Trevor has presented us with 3 options or any combination thereof that we might come up with.
Just so I understand this, for your option number 3, number 2 point, and then there's an A point, and then would it go to like the B point in the blue? Would that be the only change? Is that how we're supposed to read that?
For
like the option 3, is that the only thing, this last page with the purple? Or would you read it like this and then add this?
Option 3 would be that first point, and then it would go right to
what we have right now?
So it would basically just be redirecting you to
The Historic Preservation Ordinance.
Right.
Okay.
I'm sorry, could you help me understand that one more time?
Sure.
I'm glad you asked that.
Option 1 and 2, they spell out the requirements and procedures within the raising ordinance. Option 3 just kind of redirects you to the historic preservation ordinance itself. So I think one of the issues, and I was kind of telling Barb this, is we had this this 30-day rule already in place, but it just wasn't spelled out in our raising ordinance. And so this is kind of just people that are looking at the raising ordinance might not necessarily even cross their mind that they need to look at the historic preservation. So option 3 kind of just, oh, I'm looking at raising and building. I also need to look at this ordinance to see if there's certain requirements I need to meet or something. And then in the landmarks and preservation ordinance, I've adjusted the procedures to kind of mirror what is in option 2.
Yeah, I liked the option 2 procedures when I read them, and then I did notice how it mirrored the ones that are already, it's the closest to what we already have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I didn't like option 3 the best until I understood it. And so now I think maybe that might be one that I'd be in favor of rather than redoing, you know, rather than putting something new out there that's already essentially worded.
In that way, if down the road, if we want to change one or the other, we don't have to change both.
Yeah,
but if I can reread that and try and make it more clear that you should be redirected.
Is there a way in there? Is there a place in there that you would put the comments that we just discussed about the raise permit can be discussed and run concurrently with other development plans for that site?
Mm-hmm.
And noting that there is a 30-day state requirement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can.
And that 30 days, you know, can, or 45 or 60, could easily then be consumed concurrently with all the other plans to develop a site plan review and all the permitting processes that need to go along with whatever's going to go on that site.
I can. I'll definitely include that.
Some way to put that in so that people don't think, oh, at the end of all of this, I got to wait another 60 days.
Right.
No, you don't. You know, you need to manage the project, and this is part of the project that can be run. You know.
Yeah, I think that's a good
idea. Everything else.
And if the permit needs to be applied for or issued, and then the waiting period starts, if everything falls through, you have the ability to void the permit and refund the money, so it's not like, oh, now you have to tear the building down because, you, I mean,
yeah.
That happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be, you know, conditional based on actually getting the approval to do what you want
it
to do.
Right, it could all be voided if it has to be.
Yeah, it could be voided, yeah. Whatever the legal way to say that is, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I, since I didn't even have Dennis, our attorney, look at this yet because there's so much variability that could happen. So I can have him look at it too.
Now you have maybe something
the final
a little more specific.
Yeah.
I know one of the issues was that the penalty or something, you know.
Right.
The $1,000 or the market value or whatever. So, okay.
I like that option 3 best also.
But that's the one that I like too.
What do you think, Bobby? Do you like
great?
Which option do you like best? 3?
I'm so out of my element. I have no idea. I have to defer to your expertise.
We're not trying to twist your arm.
All right, so I can clarify option 3, add in that language, and then bring it back at the November meeting. That's not a problem.
Good discussion.
Pardon?
Good discussion.
Yeah. So we don't need to make any. We don't need a motion because we're not. We don't have the final version to,
right.
to recommend. So we still need that quorum in November.
We have faith to it.
For this,
we can.
We
either do it. Guys at work can do that for me.
I think we're ready to move on to item number 7, approval of the mailer for the open house on December 3rd, National Register.
Nice job.
Eligible home, yep.
My only question on that is if it should say on that little note on the bottom that says that you're receiving this invitation for being individually eligible or contributing to a future historic district, do the non-contributing people in a historic district get a vote when we need that buy-in? Do you know, Bobby? Like, because we're sending it to the people that are non-contributing also, that just happen to be part of that historic district?
I don't know.
So maybe we should...
I'm leaning towards gut instinct saying that they would not get a vote, but I don't know that for sure.
Okay.
Might be... kind of critical to get that, otherwise we might be open to some some litigation or at worst, but maybe.
But if they're non-contributing, they wouldn't have a tax advantage anyway, so why? I guess I'm thinking out loud, why would they be invited?
Well, they would be a part of the district, so I guess that maybe they would think that's still a benefit if they wanted to sell their house to say they were part of a historic district.
Maybe if we said contributes to something like resides in or something, mm-hmm. if it got to a point where we had to include them, it's hard to know why someone's home is a non-contributing home. I mean, we don't know what the scenario might be, how they would feel about their neighbors around them becoming, you know, I guess the question is, should we include them or not?
There aren't that many. You know, looking through this list, the NC, I believe, would be the people that are non-contributing.
So you want to change contributes to is part of?
Yeah, resides in
district?
Or resides in or is part of. I mean, unless there's a way to find out.
Looks like there's only 13 out of all of them that would be non-contributing, but we would probably invite them.
Yeah. I don't see why not. The word contributes is kind of one of those words that's used in the language of you know, intensive surveys, kind of, and maybe someone from the first look at this maybe wouldn't even, maybe they're not sure what contribute means. Maybe the guy's thinking, I don't want to contribute anything. We don't know. The question I had is this flyer going to be the first time that these homeowners are aware of the fact that there was an intensive study done and that their
home...
Potentially, unless they've been discussing
unless word of mouth has already gotten to them.
Okay.
Or they looked at the village website.
See, if we added the village website somewhere on there.
Sure.
To view, you know, direct them there. Some sort.
Sure.
Otherwise, you might get a lot of calls.
Don't give them your phone number. Just kidding.
Trevor.
That's right. You can get Trevor.
Shows up from the fire department. The radio tower.
Yeah.
That's a nice looking building.
Any other comments on the item before us here on the mailer?
I'm glad you're able to get the gymnasium. Just don't know how many people might show up.
Yeah. Because the capacity is it 80 or 75?
Yeah, right around there.
I mean,
and they get warm.
Yeah, they get warm, and then they get crabby. And if there's 120 people there, then they're in the hallway. That's good. So if we approve it, we can do it just by our voice, right? We don't need that. There's no motion involved. Or should we?
Why not?
I think we could.
It doesn't hurt.
Somebody want to make a motion? We had a couple of changes, you know, with the inclusion of the two changes, the website and changing in the wording for... contributes to, make it from contributes to resides in or part of. So with those changes, I guess, unless there are others, we can entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion with those changes.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Next item, group of items. Number 8, Riverside Drive update. Three of us in the room here were at the latest. I don't know, were you there?
Yep.
So four of us there. The only other person I saw was Roger Gresloff from the Plant Commission was there. Does anyone have a brief summary of?
It doesn't sound like we'll be having any of that stakeholder meetings anymore, does it? It sounds like they're just taking, they'll come up with a design in the spring and then they're going to present it and go with it, or?
That's kind of how I felt the same way, but I don't, you would think they would want to get back together and
I thought that
redefined.
I thought there was
or at least that other committee, because did they even meet at all, the design people? Or do you think they would give some input, like the crosswalk design? And
We met once right at the, very, very early stages.
So then they really haven't offered any input yet on this.
Third public meeting, spring 2015.
But I don't know if that's one of those stakeholder ones, or if that's another meeting like they had at the school?
Yeah, this was the public involvement meeting, not the stakeholder meeting.
I'll have to do some checking to see.
Yeah, either we have stakeholders that are, engaged in the process, or we don't,
I was under the impression we had at least a couple more meetings.
Yeah.
I would think, just based on the number of people that were there, comments that were offered, that you would want to have.
But they didn't say, we'll look into that, or
is somebody
writing it down? Mm-hmm. Nobody was even writing down public comment.
They pretty much do what they want.
That's what it seems like, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do we have some method of following up with them to see what they're... To see if they plan on having a stakeholder meeting, and if they're going to have another meeting like they just held sooner than spring of 2015. A lot of the questions that were asked, the response was the same. Well, we haven't reached that point yet. We don't know. We don't know if they're going to be signalized intersections or roundabouts, or we don't know. A lot of things haven't been come up for discussion and decision. It looked like a lot of, and I think there was a disconnect with people not understanding that there's no option. They really do need, if it's a state highway, have a bike and a ped, walkway that's connected to the roadway. It can't be the Fox River Trail. I think there was a lot of people that just walked away thinking it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. It's kind of the way they were saying, And then someone said, Why don't we decommission it and not have a state highway there, and then have it go somewhere else?
And they're paying for all the road work, right?
Yeah. So the village of Alloway is going to pay for all that reconstruction, right? How's that going to work? Anything else that we could share that?
Well, I think it's important to know that the Village of Alloway is eventually going to, the plans are, is that once it's done being reconstructed, we're going to own it. So we need to be involved in the design of it, because if we're going to own it once they're done, then we need to make sure we get what we want.
That might be easier said than done.
No. You did this. You don't have, if you're not involved in the next 6 to 8 months, it's over.
Right.
You need to be involved now.
The comment that I heard there was that we don't want Riverside Drive to end up looking like Ashland Avenue. It's not a commercial throughway to get from the Pier to Green Bay. It's a residential area that has a lot of nice features in its own right. And so that's got to be part of whatever we all do to be involved. So that was just another comment that I heard at the meeting.
Ashland Avenue became Highway 41 for a short time.
Yeah.
Original Highway 41 was Riverside Drive. There wasn't enough room, so they moved it to Ashland. They wanted something better, and then they moved it to its current location. So Highway 41 has moved a couple times. But that was originally Highway 41. Yeah. It was all the way to Chicago, downtown.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm a newcomer here, so
you have no. You just have to know that when they put a highway in, it's a long-term deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. That's the Riverside update, I guess. Next meeting date and agenda items. Item number 9.
That's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So I don't know if you want to move it or if you guys want to keep it like that.
I don't know if I'll be in town.
I don't
that's what you're going to...
We might be at risk. I might be the only one here. I'm not traveling until December. I used to come to Green Bay over Thanksgiving.
Now you can't wait
from
to get out
of Minnesota, and now I'm here, so I'm stuck.
What's the Wednesday prior to?
Yeah.
The 19th? I mean, the normally scheduled one is the 26th.
Yeah.
The 19th would work for me.
The 19th is good here, too.
I think it would probably be a better option.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
If we can get at least four.
That works. Works for me.
That works.
Does that look like it'll work for you, Bobby?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
So hopefully we'll have the grazing ordinance back on the agenda, right?
Yeah. And then I can email Josh tomorrow to let him know it's on the 19th.
And then we could have some potential discussion on the corridor. We might be in a position to have some of that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Should we have a discussion about the format and the plan for the open house on December 30th?
You should do that. Formalize your agenda for
yeah,
the night.
Yeah, what kind of posters are we going to have up?
And speaking all the time.
And who's gonna? Yeah, that kind of thing. What are the mechanics of? You know, someone should give an overview of, like, you know, the reason we're here is because we started by requesting a grant for an intensive study, and we, commissioned this company to do it. And we have a result, and it's an actionable item. And here are the steps we've taken so far, because we have two village-owned properties, and there's a consultant who's going through the process on that. And they did, you know what I mean. I'm just.
Well, you've got it all figured out, Howard. So I think that thank you for volunteering.
That's what I would say if I was volunteering.
Do you have a bunch of photos that you can just keep running?
I could find some. I think there's some on that disk that you gave me.
It might not be a bad thing. Just, I think all of them are on the disk.
Okay. Okay. And I did talk to Joe DeRose today, and he won't be at the meeting on the 3rd, but Dana will be for sure. So.
Okay.
Is it Dana or Dinah? I always get mixed up.
I'm not sure.
Spelled weird.
It's, yeah. I thought it might have been a typo the first time I saw it. It's not.
Did you hear anything from Mike Diener?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
I assume he's back from vacation.
Okay. Well, I have to talk to him anyway, so
okay.
I can ask him if you want.
Sure, if you'll see him. Okay. Otherwise, he doesn't stop in our office very often.
Yeah.
Anything else that we should have on the agenda for the 19th?
Yeah, it's going to be a full agenda just that alone.
Yep.
And we might have an update on the nomination grants.
Yep.
Because they have been sent to the state, I believe, by now. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Good. I think we're ready for item number 10, adjournment. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion.
And second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We're adjourned.